Hi, I'm Jeremy Kirk with Intel 471, and welcome to Studio 471, which is our regular video podcast series on cybersecurity and cyber threat intelligence. Artificial intelligence has dominated discussions in technology, and threat actors have been interested in this, both from the cyber criminal spheres and the nation state spheres. With me today to talk about some of the implications of this is Ashley Jess, who's a senior intelligence analyst with Intel 471, and she's been following all of this very closely. Thanks for coming along, Ashley.
Yeah, thanks, Jeremy.
So, you recently did an AI presentation at the Security Education Conference in Toronto. And I want to call out the title of it because I find it really interesting. It was Hello from the Dumpster Fire: Real Examples of Artificially Generated Malware, Disinformation, and Scam Campaigns. Can you give me like the bird's eye view of this AI dumpster fire, as you phrased it?
Yeah, so I decided to, name my presentation that because this space is kind of a hot mess. Just between the sheer number of players in the space, both on the legitimate side and the criminal side, we're in the middle of what the media dubs an AI renaissance. But what that means is that, a new company is popping up almost daily in the underground. There are constant posts about how to leverage AI. It's just everywhere all at the same time, and it's super noisy. And it's also messy because there are so many completely polar opposite opinions on the topic of AI. It's very contentious issue on whether it's good, whether it's bad, whether it's going to be the end of the planet or the future of the planet, whether it actually makes things efficient or inefficient. And there's just so many kind of instances of that with AI where it has this kind of dual-sided nature. It can be used legitimately, it can be used illegitimately, especially with content generation or coding. That kind of dual side of legitimate and malicious use is where I like to focus within the hot mess. But this area overall is just so incredibly polarizing with so many completely opposite articles one way or the other, that it's really quite an interesting one, but a hot mess of one, hence the title of the report, so, or the presentation.
So, what have we seen this year as far as cyber criminal use of AI? Has anything really surprised you?
Yeah, so like I said, threat actors are using both the legitimate and the illegitimate tools. So lately, what we've seen really spike in 2024 is a lot of offers for AI tools that have a very specific use case. So we've seen a whole range of these kinds of tools. We've seen, AI powered data exfiltration and like analysis tools specifically for ransomware and data extortion groups. We've seen AI tools specifically designed to, analyze, scrape, and summarize information about CVEs or common vulnerabilities and exposures. AI specifically to do, invoice fraud for business email compromise attacks, specific AI software for underground call centers. And then, of course, the entire suite of deep fake services. So for me, I think that the most surprising aspect of 2024, besides just like this pivoting towards specific tools, is how cheap these tools have gotten to use. Their prices dropped significantly since 2022. So we're seeing a lot more AI offerings since, that big launch in November, I believe, 2022 of OpenAI. Like in the amount of space, how cheap this has gotten has led to all of these different kinds of tools. And now you can see some trends within that because so many people are accessing the software.
And are as far as developing these models then, so they're actually developing their own models for these specific purposes. And I know I heard one of analyzing ransomware data dumps.
Yeah, so some are using, open source models and building it themselves. Some are using just, the back end API, something legitimate. So it has been really interesting in that space because sometimes they're upfront about it, sometimes they're not. So seeing, how they've built it, how cheap it is versus a good space with this is the like GPT kind of tools, like dark GPTs. We see a lot of them were just masked versions of legitimate open source LLMs or the API of legitimate tools. So that is one of the spaces where you could see those things be used. But a lot of them have pivoted this year towards open source models like Meta's Llama because it's openly available and it's better than anything they could have made themselves. There was an old one that was out of Switzerland that used to be kind of the tool of choice, but I've seen them pivot more towards Meta's Llama for their back end more and more lately.
That's interesting because some of those like Worm GPT and Fraud GPT, they were kind of reskins of, yeah, the legitimate service. So they're actually calling on other models just with kind of a skin. I mean, do you kind of expect then that they'll eventually, yeah, either use open source models or develop their own and make them more sort of specified?
Yeah, I think so. We've definitely seen a lot more, especially again, it's a great example for these GPT tools because they were something that were super prevalent in early 2023. And they were really expensive, like subscription models that people would pay like a couple $1,000 to have access to. And now more and more we're seeing these specified tools. It's not to say like we're not seeing any of these dark chatbots. We still are seeing them, but they are much cheaper. Like they're selling it for a much cheaper price because they know that people can just either build their own with an open source model or jailbreak their way into getting the prompt they need from legitimate tooling. So it is an example of where they are still around reskinning, but it's getting less and less popular because you got to have something unique to stand out in this market now because it's so saturated. And that stands again for like both the legitimate side and the illegitimate side because the cybercriminal underground is a business like the rest. So as more and more AI tools get out there, you have to have something unique to get people to pay for it.
Let's talk about malware. So, you've done some experiments around this, kind of trying to prompting models to do things like write like kind of an info stealer. And if you tell a model to do that, it won't, absolutely won't do it. But there's subtle things that you can do, can't you, to kind of get the components that you would need in a way to explain this to me a bit more.
So this is essentially jailbreaking, right? It's instead of saying like, hey, give me a key logger, you're stepping piece by piece into the end result that you're going to get is a key logger. But if you ask it for a bunch of small things that aren't inherently illegal, you can kind of sidestep around some of the barriers that the developers are putting into place. So it's been an interesting space to try to get around those barriers. Broadly, there are kind of two kinds of prompt attacks that you can do. So one is that jailbreak method. And then the other one is prompt injection. So that's, if an email assistant has like it's summarizing an email or something, has a hidden, maybe malicious prompt to reveal confidential data. So these are both extremely popular. So when it comes to, sidestepping your way into malware development around any sort of barrier, there are a lot of tutorials that are around on the underground to show you how to do this very specific use case. And developers keep changing the guardrails, but as more exist, there's so many unique ways to use the English language to get around the guardrails. It's just kind of a constant game of cat and mouse. It's very difficult to defend against the myriad of creative ways that someone can ask a question with, natural language inquiries. It's much harder to defend against that kind of thing.
Yeah, and is there a particular, I guess, component of this sort of cybercriminal fraudster community that seems to be getting the most benefit from this? Like from, you've studied the sort of quote unquote Yahoo boys, pig butchering, crypto schemes, disinformation, propaganda, or are they all just kind of gaining a benefit from it? Particularly because those types of things may not seem to an LLM model as malicious. If you're like, create me an ad with Elon Musk in it, with a Tesla phone, or which is something I saw the other day. Tell me more about that.
Yeah, so I would definitely say that folks in that sort of scam space and disinformation space, anyone that's making content that is images or text, are typically having more success with LLMs than anything that's any sort of advanced coding. So, I said I could, jailbreak my way into getting a keylogger out of, a legitimate tool, but the actual inherent code that is output from that right now isn't anything super advanced yet. It doesn't mean it won't be, but we aren't seeing any of the major like ransomware families out there being entirely AI generated. Of course, there's a sub question of how do you know that a piece of code is entirely AI generated, which is a whole host of things in itself. But what we're really seeing being the most impactful and the largest amount, just quantity wise, is in the scam space. So that's, crafting these lures. It's very easy and it doesn't flag if you ask it to generate you a polite yet urgent email directing somebody to an overdue invoice. It helps you get over that language barrier that really will help drive people to click your lure, right? And same things with anything that's generating those images or those video or those audio deep fakes. Those are, those things that are in romance scams or pig butchering scams or what the Yahoo boys are using to facilitate similar types of scams. That's where they are really alive and well, especially the deep fake ecosystem. And so we have seen them even post things on YouTube, just straight up on YouTube, showing multiple deep fake services that are cheap and available for people to use to then scam someone. So there's three types of software there that are very popular right now: Roopcam, DeepFace Live, and Deep Live Cam. And they were showing that all you needed was a NVIDIA laptop, and this is a way that you can make money. In this particular case, it was someone from the Yahoo Boys, so they were talking about how you can make money in Nigeria, but this is happening worldwide on an unfathomable scale, especially when it comes to cryptocurrency schemes like pig butchering. We didn't used to see a lot of deep fake usage in that space last year. That is really changing, and it's changing so fast in this last kind of year and a half. We've seen obviously just the easy like Gen AI profile picture. So, you're talking to a beautiful person that doesn't exist. But we're also seeing them explore things like chatbots so that the language that they're using when communicating with their victim seems more natural, and you can't tell that it's someone speaking a second language. We've seen varied success with that. We have seen them leave in the language saying that it's an LLM generated reply because they just copy and paste the whole thing. But I feel like that's just some level of human error that will always be there. But even now, like if you look at the blockchain, you can see AI vendors who have thousands of on-chain transfers from vendors in the pig butchering space. So you can see on the blockchain just how much money these AI vendors are making in these scam spaces, and it's astounding. And then, similarly, when it comes to disinformation campaigns, Russia, China, Iran, North Korea, they're all exploring AI when it comes to them perpetuating the campaigns that they want to perpetuate, especially when it comes to, this was a big year for elections. So the elections, but Olympics and the war in Ukraine are also very popular targets of these disinformation campaigns. And it wasn't just, elections in, the Western world or not just the US election. This was worldwide on an insane scale. Romania just had a huge takedown on TikTok of a bunch of AI accounts. But yeah, in India earlier this year, there was political opponents targeted with deepfake audio and video sent directly to voters on WhatsApp, which was a unique one earlier this year. Yeah, in Taiwan, the ruling DPP legislator had, sexually explicit deepfaked material made of her, and so she specifically even said when she reported it with the Ministry of Justice that this was a attempt by foreign governments to interfere in Taiwan's presidential and legislative elections. Just straight up said it. And then, of course, in the U.S., there was AI bot accounts, there were AI commercials, AI phone calls, misleading AI images of both candidates. And then the other kind of area that I think to me was the most unexpected in the disinformation space specifically was, at the end of 2023, we knew we were heading into a big election year. We knew deepfakes were starting to get cheaper than ever before, but we and a lot of people really started hypothesizing, like, wow, we're really going to enter an era where you're not going to be able to tell reality from fiction. You're not going to be able to trust anything you see. And we're coming up on the election, and this is what it's going to be like. And what happened actually, at least on a really large scale in front of the election, wasn't actually what we thought. What we saw was what's known as AI slop. And so AI slop are these kind of cartoonish looking images. You might see them shared on Facebook by maybe an older relative. They tend to have religious overtones. And what we saw was the politicization of AI slop, which was really interesting, which meant that you can make AI images that don't need to look realistic whatsoever in order to still have really, really large impacts. So we saw that in the aftermath of the hurricane. We saw that with discussions online of Springfield, Ohio, where they're AI generated memes that no one believes, that a cat is inherently holding up a sign for a politician, but it still was enough for that image to be shared to generate discussions on social media and then have a real impact in Springfield, Ohio. So you didn't actually need to cross over in between like not being able to tell fiction from reality in order for AI generated images to have really strong effects on political discourse in the US during the election. So really interesting.
I do want to dig a little bit deeper into deep fake video because the other day I saw this was a large campaign for male enhancement drugs, and it had taken videos of Sylvester Stallone, Arnold Schwarzenegger, and basically done a voiceover pushing this sort of bogus medication, and it was quite good. Like really, like there were subtle signs that it was like a little bit off and not quite right, but it was so close to like being believable. And as you say, like even if the stuff that isn't high quality is still sort of affecting discourse and things like that, what does this mean? I guess and circling back to the whole enterprise angle for this, because a lot of companies now are doing liveness detection, identity verification over the internet, where you have to get on, a call with somebody. Or, you have to take a selfie of yourself and you have to turn your head two ways. Are we w when do you think that that's going to kind of break? Like, is AI going to become good enough that those systems are going to be fooled? And then where are we going to be at as far as sort of know your customer type things, like doing that remotely?
Yeah, so I mean, cyber criminals are exploring it for KYC or know your customer bypass for sure. And real time videos at that. So there is already starting to be some success with non-rooted Android phones because they used to just check if the phone was maybe rooted. So now they're being able to do it with non-rooted Android devices, which is really something to watch. This is like a very emerging kind of space. And some folks are offering services now, again, those specific services specifically to create a deep fake for KYC bypass for you. Now, of course, some are claiming that it uses AI and it doesn't at all, and some are claiming that they have higher success rates than they do, but we are seeing more and more that are legitimately offering it. So typically this space is an interesting one because again, like those three tools that I talked about earlier, those are not expensive to use. You don't need as many reference images as you used to need. You used to need about 500 reference images of a person to even have a remotely convincing deep fake. Some of these tools can do pretty well with just one, and the more you give it, the better it's going to get. But yeah, and it's really cheap. I mean, you used to have to pay hundreds, if not thousands, of dollars for a deep fake video that was only, 15 seconds long. Now you can do it yourself on a NVIDIA laptop, or you can pay someone on Fiverr to do it. Or there was a service, I can't remember exactly how much it was, but you paid a subscription fee of like $100 a month and you can get up to 90 deep fakes a day. Like it's so much cheaper than it was before. So first off, you can just try to brute force your way in and have some success, just based on the actual expense level of all of this. But now, the ones that are expensive, that have, the foothold, I guess, in the ecosystem of whatever forum they're advertising on. If they're advertising an expensive one, it's because they know that it's working. Especially these non-rooted Android phones are the ones that are costing a lot of money for cyber criminals to explore because those are the ones that are being the most successful so far. So it
And
is
explain to me why is it Android phones? Why is it non-rooted Android phones? What's the
So a
appeal of those?
non-rooted Android phone is less, it helps it detect that it's not being emulated. So those emulator detectors are less likely to catch it. So it means some of the, maybe red flags that, the bank or crypto exchange might have to be like, oh, this is an emulated device. We're not going to take it. It might bypass that. So, which is huge. Like that's a big deal to be able to pass. That's kind of one of the main gates they have. So, yeah, it's not surprising. There's a lot of folks interested in this space right now because you need fewer reference images than ever. It's cheaper than ever. There are as a service models now, and the payout could be large depending on what you're able to get, especially targeting crypto exchanges in particular, right? Because you can try to find a whale and go after them. So, fraudsters are definitely testing this technology out to see how far they can get. And as long as they're finding financial success with it, they're going to continue to do so.
And as far as detection, then, is this what are the challenges around detection? And is that going to become so difficult at some point that it's literally going to be impossible?
Yeah, so it's a bit of a Pandora's box. One of the other reasons my presentation was named what it was. But, by now, I feel like everyone has seen the tips on detecting AI-generated content from 2022. Look at the language or the style, vagueness or tone, if it's written, if it's an image, looking at things like, a wonky background or the fingers or, a lot of that's still true, but it is getting better. Just look at text, right? There's a lot more successful text in the background of these images than there used to be, right? It used to just have kind of wingdings-ish looking text behind you, but it can put real words, in AI-generated images now. So it's gotten harder because the text's gotten better, yes. But the other aspect of it that makes it so difficult now is just the sheer volume of AI-generated content that's out there now, because again, it's cheaper than ever before. So it's actually really difficult to expect an average user, when they're consuming media in a newsfeed style format, to critically examine things like the fingers in every single image you see in a day. Like, you're just psychologically not built for that.
Yes.
So it needs to be customer or user facing in the actual social media platform itself. And that's, kind of the concept of content provenance, which is what a lot of people are exploring in this space, which is just the tracking and the documentation of the origins and the history of any piece of content, whether that's text, image, or video. So, the idea behind content provenance is that it would establish things like credibility, authenticity, and again, with the whole ethical consideration of AI, supporting, proper attribution to the original creator or artist, because there's that whole side of AI as well.
Yes.
So, in today's, Gen AI landscape, this concept of content provenance is really, really essential for things like mitigating copyright issues, combating misinformation, and ensuring the authenticity of anything that you are receiving. So, this type of tracking and documentation isn't really prevalent right now. Those that are exploring it are using blockchain technology to do it, which makes sense, right? The blockchain isn't
Yeah.
really manipulatable, so it makes sense that they're exploring it. It's kind of like NFTs at scale, is a way to think about it if you haven't thought about it yet. And
Interesting,
there
yeah.
are, there are some leaders in this space. C2PA, they have an open technical standard that does provide the ability to trace the origins of different types of media. It's been done by Adobe, Microsoft, and I think the BBC and a few other people with them. So it's a good coalition of people really trying to kind of figure out how to do this. Google, they have SynthID. They're working in watermarking their AI content, at least, so you can track AI-generated content. But it's still difficult, right? If you're viewing an AI-generated video, and then you take a screenshot, the metadata of your screenshot isn't going to show that it's AI-generated. So, do you put a
Yeah.
big watermark in the middle that's not manipulatable? How do you do that, right? So, there's a lot of aspects of just how prevalent it is. And there's, a couple academic projects that are in this space. MIT, unsurprisingly, in the US, it has a whole deep fake detection research team, and there's vendors in this space, whether it's detecting deep fake image or audio, or putting a piece of text into something and trying to figure out if it's AI generated. I've tested them myself. I've had mixed success. I've definitely had it tell me something completely AI generated is human and something completely
Oh.
human generated is AI,
Oh
as I've
no.
tested it different ways. I find it depends on what you're talking about. If you add in things like specific names or dates, it starts to get specific enough where it stops detecting that it's AI. So it's an interesting space, but they're evolving and they're getting better, right? Like, every time I test it, it gets better than the last time that I tested it. So that's kind of also the byproduct in the dual nature of AI. Like, as the legitimate vendors keep getting better, defenses keep getting better, but cyber criminals keep getting better. So then, as cyber criminals keep getting better, the defenses have to keep getting better. And then it's the
Yeah.
same cycle of cat and mouse that's in all of cyber. I think it's just on a accelerated scale, in the realm of AI, just on a much faster cadence than we've seen before. But there's a lot of work being done in detection. But I think a lot of it can be done proactively with the concept of content provenance, that what you are viewing is what you were intended to view.
What do you feel about regulation? How is this going to impact this sphere?
Yeah, so regulation's tough because AI isn't inherently good or bad. Like, as much as people write articles one way or the other, itself isn't inherently good or bad. And regulation has been a very contentious issue in this space. But attempts have been made to try and mitigate potential harm, and they should be made to try to mitigate potential harm. So worldwide, folks are looking to regulate. The AI Act and the AI Act are in the EU. The US has a whole series of executive orders. Not sure what may or may not happen with the new administration, if they'll add to them, remove some of them, but they are there for now. And then there are, legislations, proposed bills, and, up in Canada, they have the AI and Data Act, which is also a really great bill, but it's still pending. But broadly, it's lagging behind. But that's not an unfamiliar space to be in with tech regulation. And it's not always the worst space to be in because it allows you space to update the regulations as they update. But also at the same time, you don't want to be behind the threat actors to a degree where you can never catch up. So it's kind of a tightrope there. In the US, for example, I think they're currently trying to tighten some regulations with remote access to AI chips through the cloud, because it's an access route China is already using and has been using. So they're trying to do regulations for something that's already being manipulated. So I do think it is important to, increase the pace of regulation because as geopolitical ramifications of this technology continue to deepen and intensify past where they already are. And cyber criminal use continues to expand past what it already is. It's very key to try to shift into a more proactive, centralized, regulatory stance.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining me, Ashley. I appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. Happy to be here.